This is CIUT 89.5 FM, the University of Toronto Community Radio Station, broadcasting live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from Heart House, University of Toronto.
Vibe Collective CIUT 89.5 FM. We are the Vibe Collective. I'm Jams, and joining me in studio,
Mally, aka Docu Vixen,
Adrian Worrell.
And a big shout out to both Adnan and Kemba. Adnan is feeling under the weather, and Kemba had a family emergency. So our thoughts are going out to them. But we're the Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we normally engage in roundtable discussions. We talk about important issues such as social justice, decolonization, the culture of identity, the culture of resistance, rather, identity, and environmental justice. And sometimes we talk about arts and hip-hop. And from 4 to 5, either myself and or Griffin or Budnan brings you music to move you, and we will be doing that today later on in the show. But first, we have a couple of guests who are joining us. Melinda, do you want to give a little intro for our guests?
Well, they are two actors who are part of this play that's going around schools in Toronto, and it's called The Meeting. I'll let them explain a little bit more later, but I'm just going to give a bio of the African Theater Ensemble. It recognizes the power of live art to inspire and renew the human spirit and to forge human relationships across cultures, creeds, ethnicities, ideologies, genders, and social classes. To that end, our work presents the different theatrical idioms, traditions, and experiences of Africa, in so doing creates an avenue for cultural exchange between Africa and Canada. And I would like to welcome to the studio Aaron, and I'm just meeting you on air. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves and then talk about the play that you're a part of.
All right. Yeah, so my name's Tony.
Hi, Tony.
I'm an actor with African Theater Ensemble. I'm just going to regurgitate pretty much everything you said. We have a play. It's called The Meeting. It's an imagination of what could have happened if Malcolm X and Martin Luther King ever really sat down and spoke about their ideals. It's a fantastic read. Just like going through the script alone, we had a lot of fun working with it.
And Tony, who do you play?
I play a figure that nobody has ever heard of. If you look him up on Google, you will not find him, so please don't try. His name is Rashad. The character itself is more of a, once again, an imagination of all the people that Malcolm X had around him. I play Malcolm X's bodyguard. Per se, yeah.
And Aaron, who do you play?
Hi, my name is Aaron Monroe. I'm also an actor with African Theater Ensemble, and I'm playing the role of Malcolm X. This is a really, really gripping play. Right from start to finish, you're you're glued to the performance. Like Tomi said, it's a fictional setting in a hotel room. And what the playwright did, who Jeff Stetson, who wrote the play, he fused, things that they both have said in their lives and their speeches into what a conversation would look like, in his view, if they were to have a meeting. So there's a lot of powerful dialogue, a lot of things that are said that the audience really need to tune into to really understand the meaning of the play. So it's awesome.
Can you talk a little bit about who the audience is and what the audience response has been like so far?
Audience response, wow, it's been actually quite interesting. We've been to a few schools, and our last performance was at a community center / library. So the audience is varied. We've had everything from, young kids between 8 and 13 years old in elementary schools to high schools, and then our last performance, we had a lot of, old people, older folks who, some of whom, and this is not a joke at all, who remember these times and were like, you know what, the way we had a couple who came up to us and they were basically commenting on the fact that the way we portrayed it was so lifelike, it took them back to that time. Like, our audiences it's been a wide range of responses we've gotten. We've actually been quite surprised because the content of the play itself is very heavy. It's not, for just anybody who could just sit down. I want to watch a play, and they'll go sit down and just grasp it immediately. But we were surprised. We went to our first performance was at a high school, and grade 9s and 10s, and they totally understood everything that was going on. So it's good to see that kind of a reaction, at least just to know that what we're working towards, trying to let people know about what happened back then, because thing about it is that the history is being forgotten little by little. The fact that we're letting people know and they understand it, it's quite impressive.
To what extent did the few conversations that we know Malcolm and Martin had affect that, the way that perhaps the screenplay was written or the way that you carry the characters? I remember they had this classic debate. I can't remember which show it was on. And it was very young Malcolm with a much more kind of demure, polished Martin Luther King. And that exchange was very potent. So I was wondering to what extent that those resources might have factored into either the writing or your performance of the play.
Well, in real life, they actually they only met once, and it was for less than 2 minutes. So they never really got to discuss what they both believed in and kind of compare it to what the other believed in, right? So that's the beauty of this play is it's like you can use your imagination. Aside from what Stetson's written, people probably will perceive the play differently, and they'll probably put their own ideas into, okay, well, maybe he would have said this, or maybe, they would have talked about this. Maybe they wouldn't have argued. Maybe they would have, been really cool with each other because they realized they were fighting for the same thing, just doing it different ways. And because they both came from such different backgrounds, Malcolm basically had a rough life. Dr. King was from an educated family in the church. So all those things factored into why they were the way they were, And so coming back to your question about that shaping the characters or, their input in the play, that also has a big part of a lot of the dialogue, which is, like Tomi said, very... the audience has to be assertive to that. The beauty of it is it's fictional, right? And it's one person's interpretation of what they would have talked about from his research. But the beauty of it is that everyone who watches the play can put their imagination into it and say, okay, well, that was cool. I think they would have talked about this, and they would have gotten somewhere, or you know what I mean?
So yeah. in your queue in a sort of sessions, has that kind of come up of like people's interpretations after they see the play? You know, has that been in the questions? Has that come up?
What in the sense of their
in the dialogue that comes after the play? Because mm-hmm. you guys have a Q&A, right?
Yes, we do.
So you know, has people said? Has that sort of sparked a debate of that kind of feeling of what would have, like, this is what I thought would have been said.
Would have been said?
Yeah.
Like, in the sense of people having their own opinions.
Yeah, has that been in the dialogue and stuff, yeah?
No, I wouldn't say so, because a lot of the times, at least I from what I perceived, the audiences really got into the idea that Stetson was trying to portray in the play. Mm-hmm. They really understood the feeling of Malcolm's ideals versus Martin's ideals, right? So there wasn't really a question that was ever posed to us, at least so far, of, you know, I don't really think that was how it could have gone. There was no doubt in the audience's mind that this, at least the ideals that these guys stood for, were so steadfast in their lives that this is how they would have gone. There was no, you know, Martin Luther King could have probably said something else when this happened. Mm-hmm. It was very, they really bought in to what we were putting out on stage. I think it's good, it's fantastic to ask questions, right? But sometimes it's also good to at least, even if you do have questions, to understand what is being put forth before you ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a lot of the cases they did understand, mm-hmm. and to that effect, they didn't really feel the need to ask that many questions. There might have been questions, right? But
yeah, a lot of the kids are shy.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Are shy to ask questions. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, if, in case there's anybody out there who's tuning in who isn't familiar with sort of the differences between the position that Malcolm X held in terms of, you know, strategy for resistance, and then Martin Luther King, you know, we're all familiar with his famous speech, "I had a dream," or "I have a dream," rather. But also, you know, he was, I think, favored because he talked a lot about nonviolence in his resistance. Oh, you don't have a headset. We'll get you a headset. So, Tony, do you want to
repeat the question?
No.
Go ahead.
So, well, Martin Luther King pretty much had the idea of resistance by peace, right? Like, just to summarize that, resistance by peace, basically in the sense of whatever happens, there's a speech that was that Malcolm X in the play, he sort of puts into, like, he satires the speech. He just goes around talking about all the things that are said in the speech, and he's really questioning MLK, saying, did you actually say such a thing, right? In the sense of basically go by our churches and beat us and burn our churches, bomb our homes, and we will still love you, right? That was the kind of idea, and this is something that Martin Luther King actually did say. You know, do whatever you want to us, and we will still love you. We will not, you know, we will wear you down with our capacity to suffer. That's one of the things, right? Mm-hmm. So, for a guy like Malcolm X, this, and actually to a lot of people who would hear this, even nowadays, or even going back then, this was an idea that just sounded ludicrous. You're going to beat me, and I'm not going to say anything. I know it says it in the Bible, but mm-hmm. there's a certain point where, you know, you can take certain things too. Mm-hmm. But that's where Malcolm X and Martin Luther King really had their biggest difference.
Yeah,
I think Malcolm says in the play,
Well, we don't want to give too much of the dialogue away.
I'm not going to say it all.
To come watch it.
Hey, they do have to come watch it. They won't understand anything. I'm just saying. Right? Violence in the name of self-defense is...
Aggression.
Aggression in the name of self-defense is not violence. It's mm-hmm. honor. I think that's a good summation of everything that at least Malcolm X was able to... That was his argument, mm-hmm. you know?
And if you also look at where Malcolm came from, Malcolm was in prison, was discouraged from being what he wanted to be, which was a lawyer from a child, picked up the wrong life, ended up in prison. So coming from that environment, it is kind of you have to do what you have to do to survive. And so he incorporated that into his beliefs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King came from a Christian background. Where, you know, you obey God and you have mercy on people and you show mercy to people that want to hurt you or want to harm you. And so you can totally understand why they both believe what they believed, right? And for Malcolm, he was heavily influenced by the Nation of Islam mm-hmm. and, almost like black supremacy in a way. He preached things while he was with the Nation of Islam that he had apologized for after he left, right? Because he had learned that, you know, that's not necessarily the way that we should deal with this. And he never did completely change to say, aggression in the name of self-defense is not violence. He was still for... defending yourself by any means necessary, and that could
just not to that extent.
Not to that extent, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. I think at the end of both their lives, you could see a kind of progression where they were coming closer together. Absolutely. So, that's why I find the concept of the play so interesting, right? Because you see at the end of Martin's life, he was kind of going towards, you know, organizing with mm-hmm. with different groups and stuff like that. And then also Malcolm at the end of his life, he was doing the same. So it seems like they were kind of coming together, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I find the concept of the play so interesting.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. they both seemed to be really guided by a particular ideology, each of them, that opened up, as you're saying, Melinda, as they each of them reached, you know, the end of their lives, it seemed to open up. And I'm interested in knowing how that is approached in the play, because you have, you know, it's not that they're polarized, and they shouldn't be polarized. I mean, they're just coming from two sort of different perspectives, but very ideological. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then as they both sort of get to a place in their lives that really shifts. Mm-hmm. So is that addressed in the meeting itself, or is it addressed in the play? And how is that examined?
The shift itself. Well, I think... Well, not to give too much away, it is addressed. it is addressed. Like, mm-hmm. can't we have a change of ideals? Aren't we both fighting for the same thing? And in that case, why can't we just... can't we all just get along? That kind of a situation. It is addressed, and... I really don't want to give it away.
Yeah, let's just say that Jeff Stetson did a good job in incorporating every aspect of their lives into this meeting mm-hmm. from start to finish. So,
okay. So I get it. You guys don't want to give too much away. Can you talk a little bit about your own preparation for the roles? Sure. I imagine for Malcolm X, you know, you had a lot to draw on, but your character, is it a composite character? Or
it's could say it's a composite character because Rashad is sort of a representation of, once again, like I said before, everybody that really hung around Malcolm X before and after he left the NOI, right? So he was, I guess we could say he was that bodyguard that was closer than the rest.
Okay.
Right? He was more than a bodyguard, more than a regular friend. He was with him all the time. Once again, there is no historical figure that even comes close to being represented as such in Google. Don't Google it. You won't find it. But, yeah.
Rashad, so he is a fictional character.
He is completely fictional.
Okay.
And, well, to prepare for it, I just had to sound a lot older than I do now. Yes, that is what the director told me. I sound too young. Yeah. Apart from that, it was just basically reading up on a lot of Malcolm X's his struggles and seeing, and you had to imagine what it would be like, right? And I don't know. It wasn't easy, but it was worth it. Just to prepare for this character alone, it was worth it.
Speaking of the tricks of Google, the thing I was referring to before is actually a jammed together YouTube debate. It wasn't an actual debate, as I was politely informed. But I think it also speaks to the idea that of the people wanting to hear this kind of conversation or this kind of,
yeah,
like the fictional aspect that we're seeing. And so, if you can, I wonder, like, what do you think in preparing, as you were thinking, like, why didn't they spend more time together, or why didn't there seem to be more of a conversation between these two, these major figures of this, of these movements at this time?
I probably have to say that at that time in America, it was really rough. There's a lot of conspiracies as to why they, you know, they were saying that, you know, it was the media that put them against each other. You know, they would never mesh because they so strongly believed in different things. But to think, like, if they did actually talk and discuss, I think you have to look at, for Malcolm, you have to look at after he went to Mecca and after he realized that outside of the U.S., or, you know, the American dream, I guess you could say, that whites were normal, and whites, they treated colored people with respect when he went to, you know, Mecca and North Africa. And so I think if they had spoken before that, they would have definitely probably been clashing, for sure, because Malcolm was so extreme in his beliefs of, you know, with the Nation of Islam. If they met after he had come back from Mecca, I think things would have progressed for sure, because he had a different outlook on what he was preaching before, what he could do now to really kind of push this movement even further forward in America towards, you know, what was going on. Yeah, I think it would have, those two times were definitely vital.
And aside from the class, the internationalist view, whereas King was someone who looked to India and to different struggles. Malcolm very much, at the earlier stages of his life, so seemed very much more focused on the kind of the American question.
Yeah, absolutely.
So being able to look beyond one's immediate situation certainly, I guess, would affect that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because another thing was just the fact that you are looking at two different religions and two different ways of looking at a certain situation. You know, Christians had, still have, the ideal of, you know, when someone slaps you, you turn the other cheek. Right? And the idea that the Nation of Islam had back then was somebody slaps you, slap them right back and make sure they never use that hand again. Right? So this was something that was really purported by the Nation of Islam. And when he went to Mecca, he really realized that this isn't how it's done. You know, that there are peaceful Muslims in the world. Peaceful white Muslims who respect peaceful black Muslims and everybody, you know. He said in the play, not giving a lot away.
We'll reference the whole place. Okay.
He said when he went to Mecca, he saw whites that when they spoke of color, spoke of it as an incident. It wasn't like, oh, you're black. No, it was more like, oh, because you're black. And it was like something that you could say in passing phrase. It wasn't really meant as a direct insult or anything like that. But mm-hmm. over in America, when it was said, it was completely
different.
You know
different. What it meant.
You know what it meant. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yet we do know that color or race or ancestry does play a major factor in Islam to a degree. I mean...
Yeah, to a degree it does.
Well, to a pretty big right? degree. I mean, you had like the Trans-Sahara slave trade, for example, which had was extracting... I think actually more people went to across the desert than across the ocean. Mm-hmm. You certainly have, even now today, we see the conflicts playing out, like in, say, Mali or different countries where color is a factor. To what extent do you think that maybe Malcolm's idea or the story of Malcolm going to Mecca and seeing this kind of racial unity was a bit of a novelty in a sense, whereas he didn't get a chance to explore the different aspects of these different cultures that Islam transects?
You know, with that, I do have to say that when Malcolm, it's not like Malcolm went there and completely revamped his outlook based on what he saw there, right? He came back and he realized that, yes, it's different over there. And obviously, it's not the same way over here. So the best thing to do right now is to work on changing what we have right here. So he couldn't completely change his outlook to a MLK state of mind. He had to at least start by addressing it, changing his way of thinking, geared towards that state of mind, but he couldn't dumb it down 100%. Right?
He still had to stand.
He had to stand for something. Mm-hmm. And if it was reducing the amount of aggression that he wanted to put into it, I guess that would be a way to start off, you know, taking the heat off his approach.
Mm. I think that's like sort of the amazing thing what you could do with theater is actually kind of work out those what ifs, right? Mm. Because, I mean, I've had those questions too, like what if this happened or what if, you know, these movements do this. You know what I'm saying? It's like you, but I think that's the beauty of theater is that you can actually explore those kind of issues. And I wanted to go back because we didn't really get how you prepared for the role of Malcolm. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. where do you start, really? I read his biography 4 times. I was living on Wikipedia. I watched a lot of his speeches and interviews on YouTube. Just to hear how he spoke and hear how he responded, because a lot of interviewers would try to put him against the wall because he had such, you know, radical views, and he knew exactly what to say. And that's one of the beauties about playing this character is he's from a rough background, but he's just as smart as someone who went to school and had a good family background and upbringing. Even studying like his mannerisms, the way he sits, the way he, you know, he ponders, the way he listens, the physical side of the character was a big one too. How he walks, when he's speaking, what does he do? Does he use his hands? You know.
Did you watch Spike Lee's film?
I watched the trailer, but one of the things that our director had informed us not to do is watch other people's performances mm-hmm. because it'll influence yours too much. You have to be yourself. And bring yourself to the character.
I didn't watch anything from my
So, I mean, it was a lot of that. And then working with our director, Awaba, who's not here, by the way, but she says hello to everyone. It was, she definitely got me into character and got the best out of me. So that mm-hmm. helped a lot, too.
Mm. Yeah. And who's playing MLK?
MLK is being played by a... veteran of the acting game, Roy Lewis. You will just—he's
a really good performer. He's a Stratford favorite.
I'm speechless right now. Like he's yeah. Nah. Roy's got skills.
Yeah, Roy's he's on top of things, and he's a really good actor. He was a pleasure to work with.
Still is.
And yeah, unfortunately, he couldn't be here today. He says hello to everyone as well, but yeah.
Okay, I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to The Vibe Collective. We are speaking with Tomi. Can you give us your last
Tomi
name?
Tomi
Depot, my apologies.
No, don't worry.
And Aaron
Monroe.
Monroe from African Theater. We have to go to a very quick break, and we will continue talking to them about the meeting, a play between, about the meeting between, the fictional meeting between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. on The Vibe Collective, CIUT 89.5 FM.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And we're back on The Vibe Collective, CIUT 89.5 FM. We are The Vibe Collective. I am Jams. Joining me in studio, my co-hosts,
Mally, a.k.a. Docu Vixen,
Adrian Worrell.
And we are speaking with Aaron Monroe and Tomi
Depot
from African Theater Ensemble, which has been around for just almost
since
15 years. Yeah, 14 years now. And before we get back into talking about The Meeting, which is the play that you both are all in, can you tell us a little bit about the work that African Theater Ensemble does? I know we touched on it a little bit at the beginning of the show, Melinda, when she was reading the intro for you guys, but for our listeners, maybe you can just fill them in on the history of African Theater Ensemble.
Okay, well, this is actually my first time working with African Theater Ensemble, and so far it's been a really, really enjoyable experience. But I'll let Tony answer that because he's worked with them before. But I can say that they're a really, really great company.
It's not like I'm a veteran. I only worked with them one time before. Just saying. But yeah, what they do is obviously we're a theater group. It's a lot of plays, right? But not just in the sense of just having any regular. We host it at some theater house, and that's it. We really try to bring the community in, and if we can't get the community to come, we go to the community, which is why this particular play, The Meeting, and we have another one touring as well. It's called Lost. Mm-hmm. The Meeting and Lost are both touring plays for the month of February. I believe we did The Meeting last year. I didn't do it. It was a whole different cast. And we basically, I think we do this every year, at least we try to. Every year have something touring for the month of February, just in sort of a homage to Black History Month. Yes. It's always good to have something that that can educate as well as entertain. A lot of the communities we go to aren't like just, it's not always just, you know, local things. For example, Friday we were scheduled to go. Friday morning, we're scheduled to be in Scarborough. Well, the snowstorm didn't help. But we've gone to Brampton. Mm-hmm.
Swansea Town Hall.
Swansea Town Hall on Thursday. So we've actually been around. And I believe we do have a Mississauga show coming up next week. So we don't stay in one place.
We want everyone.
Yeah, we want everyone to come see it. Yeah.
And how does that affect the energy of the performance? Because you're adjusting to a new environment every time, so maybe your cues might not always be in the same spot. So how does that affect the
our emotions and everything?
Yeah, the gelling of the actors.
You know, it's actually funny. Like at least every space we've been in, when it comes to like having, you know, our exits and our entrances and where we stand and where we sit, it's been, adjusting has been one of the fun parts about it. Because, for example, our last show at Swansea Hall, there was a particular part where usually the chair is near the door. This time the chair wasn't even close. So I had to literally improvise. We didn't rehearse this beforehand. Mm-hmm. I had to literally improvise just collecting the jacket and carrying it all the way to the chair and then do a lot of just mime just to get out. So that was fun. I'm just gonna say it was fantastic, but it's
I don't know you well. Is that sarcasm?
it's a bit of realism and sarcasm. I will say, but it's good when you're able to work these things out on the fly and actually have it come out. The best part of making mistakes on stage is that the audience doesn't know, right?
Yeah, your ability to improv definitely has
improv
to be.
Is fan. Yeah. It's oh dear.
Yeah,
without improv, we'd be in trouble, right? So a lot of improv has to take place in order for us to adjust. But when it does take place and it goes off without a hitch, we have collective sighs of relief, and it's all good.
And also, as an actor, you have to be able to adapt as well. Because you rehearse in one space and you get used to that space, and so when you're going around to different places, you definitely have to be able to adapt to new environments and new audiences as well. So,
I don't know. I think the whole I'm not an actor, but the whole sort of like moving, situations, it becomes sort of a new experience every time. So I don't know. I think that would be really challenging, exciting for an actor.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it is.
Definitely.
And another thing that you also have to get to quickly adjust to is the space itself, because not just the stage, but the audience space, because the area could not be acoustically sound. Reason I'm saying that is because up till recently, we had some mic problems, and. Yeah, half the time in our first two shows, they couldn't hear us, right? So there were people that, if they listened, they would hear us. They'd hear, very low volume. But the fact of the matter is, when we were up there, we thought we were doing great. We were like, oh, we killed it, man. We were fantastic. Then at the end, our director comes like, they didn't hear you guys. I was like, really? A lot of them came, and they were after the show. A lot of people came. Oh my God, you were fantastic! And we were like, thank you. But then we realized that it wasn't really the case. They just like Martin Luther King.
Well, okay. Getting back to the play, I know you guys don't want to give too much away, but just to try and paint a picture for.
Okay.
Our audience. Can you talk about the meeting? the actual meeting. I mean, is it the entirety of the play? Is this meeting? Is there a story building up to the meeting?
Yeah.
And then when the meeting takes place, can you give us a hint of what it looked like?
Or
what
I'll it let looks you like? Carry this one.
there is some significance to the meeting and why it's happening and when it's happening. No, I don't want to say why it's happening or when it's happening, but if you know the story of both figures, it's said in the play why it's happening and when it's happening. You have Malcolm who is obviously very worried for his family and his safety, because he has just left the NOI. And then you have Martin Luther King, who is like, well, why are you, why do you want to meet with me? And I'm like, I'm not comfortable leaving the South of America. Where I live. And so that also adds for some humor to the play. There is some humor in there.
A little bit. It's not that much.
It's not that much, but there is some. And if people want to get a head start, they can read about both figures. And when they hear why and when they're meeting in the play, it'll make total sense.
Okay. So I'll see what. Okay. Beginning, we have a bit of a confrontation between Rashad and Malcolm. Malcolm's house was just bombed. I think we could talk about that. His house was bombed. It did happen. This is a fact. So Malcolm's scared. After that, is the rest of the play.
dun, 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 dun.
Go see the play.
You bring up humor, which I think is interesting because, the best I can tell, both men had exceptional senses of humor. Malcolm, I think it came out in a lot of his interviews and his speeches. We were listening to one last week, and I was on the ground. I'm like, man, 50 years later, this guy still has me laughing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Martin Luther King, he always presented this very kind of, you know, demure, stately. But if you read some of the transcripts of things he said, off camera, this is a guy with a really sharp wit.
Yeah.
So I was wondering to what extent that might have informed some of those moments of humor in the play itself, if you.
Rashad has a funny moment where
don't talk about my funny moments.
Where his
I want it to be a surprise.
Because he's my bodyguard, he's overprotective, obviously.
Oh, okay.
And so you'll see that when Martin Luther King is introduced to the play, you'll see what happens. If you come see it, please do.
When you go see it.
You'll see that. You'll also see some kind of sarcasm. Some sarcastic humor between me and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, just from their respective backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You know, comparing, you know, the country guy from a small town to, you know, the guy from a big city. Their respective differences. So,
and also, I mean, there's been a lot of going forward. There's been a lot of, humor and controversy around the legacy and the memories of Malcolm and Martin. I guess one of the first ones, not the first ones, but one of them was the Barbershop when they, I don't know if you saw the Barbershop.
I did, movie. But a long time ago.
Okay, we'll skip that one. And then I think actually Key and Peele, they did a take up on the meeting.
I haven't seen it.
Hilarious. Those guys kill me.
They are something else. So I was wondering, to the extent to which that the culture of humor, that the way that I think more Martin than Malcolm, I think people don't really crack too many jokes on Malcolm, but they certainly do take some.
Yeah,
for whatever reason, I don't know why.
I mean, come on. who would crack on a dude that's willing to burn your house because you beat his child? Like, I wouldn't even go near him.
I'm completely baffled.
I mean, he's a sweetheart, but yeah, I wouldn't.
But how did those other representations or that kind of the way that we kind of poke fun at them, how has that affected either your performances or the way that you think that audiences might have reacted or are taking in this play?
I think in certain cases, like when the audience would see that, okay, yeah, it's about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, once they heard the name Martin Luther King, they were expecting, when you're talking about the comedic aspect of the performance, they were expecting much less of a, you know, I am Martin Luther King, and much more, I have a dream, I am Martin Luther King.
Slow speaking,
and I do not, I'm not going to strike back, one of those, you know.
Singing, not really speaking.
Yeah, you know, expecting the organ in the background. Oh, Jesus, one of those, right? But it really doesn't play out that way. I mean, we do have those moments. I won't spoil it.
It's a must see. That's all we can say. You know, if you guys have the time, please come and check it out.
So
you won't be disappointed.
For the listening audience, if you would like to find out more about the meeting, africantheater.org is the name of the website. What do you have coming up in the next couple of weeks? Because this play runs February 1st to the 26th.
Yes,
it does.
The majority of performances are
during the week.
In schools, during school hours.
But we do have a couple coming up. On Tuesday, that's a school.
We have a couple of evening performances coming up.
26th.
The most notable one is right here at Hard House on the 26th.
Ah, downstairs in the theater.
Downstairs in the theater.
Okay.
It's free admission. Donations are greatly appreciated.
Not to us personally. I'm just saying.
You know, so
to the theater.
You know.
No, but if you want to,
if you want to, you'll have your hat out after the performance.
So that'll actually be our closing night.
Okay.
And we will be having a 2-week run for general audiences in May and June. So if you're unable to come to any of the public performances this time, we will be having a run in May, June for general audiences. And so there'll be more information posted on that. Like you said, if you want to keep up with African Theater Ensemble, visit their website, follow them on Twitter, at African Theater, and they're also on Facebook as well. They have a group, African Theater Ensemble. So don't be shy. Get at them.
Yeah. Now, we just have about 14 minutes left in the hour. What have you all learned from researching for your roles and from acting in this play? Not just about the characters, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, but personally in your research journey, what have you taken away?
I learned that I can memorize not just my parts of the script, but everybody's parts in 2 weeks.
Like, that's an inside joke.
Like, you don't even know. There were when we were in rehearsal, like, it's a line, and I wouldn't even be looking at the script. I'd be on my phone playing some, like, pool, and I'd just say the line, and I can't tell you where it came from, but... It was good to know that I still had the chops for it. I have this particular role is my first role in 3 years, because for the most part I was in school, right? So I just finished school in October. So my first major role in like 3 years, and I was like, okay, cool. I can still do it. It was good to know. I did feel that this was a very, it was an eye-opening moment for me just to do this play, because it made me realize that my love for what I want to do, which is acting, is still as strong as ever, so it's not going anywhere, no matter how much my parents don't want it to be there. But that's a joke. They love me and they love what I do.
Shout out to Tommy's parents.
Yes, shout out to my parents, although they will not hear this. They don't listen to the radio. It sucks. I love radio. Aaron?
I have to say, for me, I've only recently just started doing theater acting, and this is my second play. And to be offered the role of Malcolm X is obviously an honor, a challenge, a big challenge. But I was looking forward to that challenge. And I will say what I learned from this role was that I want you know, everyone out there to know about these two gentlemen and what they stood for. Because they're part of the reason that we're able to sit in the same rooms today without being hassled, in peace, you know. And I think sometimes we forget that and we take it for granted. And so it's important that you guys know that these men were willing to die, which they did, so that we could, you know, be together in peace. That's what really hit me the most about playing this role. So
yeah. It's really intense just to think about the fact that there are people, well, I don't know if there still are, but there were people that were willing to die for an ideal, you know? Let's see.
There still are. I mean, you see that with the Idle No More movement. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that, but anytime I think about what's happening today and what happened back in the day with the civil rights movement, it's so directly related. Yep. So Chief Teresa Spence did a hunger strike. Not only her, an elder Raymond Robinson also did a hunger strike, and he was, I think, a day behind her hunger strike, and they were both putting their lives on the line for a very similar cause. For indigenous people.
And to actually bring the family back into right now, we still don't know what's going on with Malcolm Shabazz. He's being held.
Oh, the grandson.
Yes.
Oh. Yes.
He's somewhere in the FBI land.
Yes.
So.
That's right.
I think it's important that, like, we're not disconnected from those movements. It's still going on. So yeah. Absolutely.
If you're on Twitter, hashtag free Shabazz.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, so. Definitely.
Go ahead. Well, I don't know if we're winding down, but I just wanted to give a couple shout outs to our director, Awoba. Fantastic working with her. She's assistant directing The Whipping Man with Obsidian now, so be sure to check that out in March. Modupe, our artistic coordinator.
For the Nigerians listening, Modupe.
My apologies.
No, it's cool. It's cool.
And Modupe wrote Loss.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Yes, she did.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Big shout out to our stage manager, our road dog who travels with us everywhere. Without him, we would have no set. Yes. Daniel Bennett. Yes.
He's the man.
He's
the guy who hooks you up.
If we want donuts, Daniel's on it.
Wow. I want steak and eggs. I gotta pay for it, but you know, he'd take me to where I could get steak and eggs. Good. Yeah. He's a good dude.
And of course,
Roy.
Who's playing Roy Martin Lewis. Luther King. He's a Stratford favorite, so if you're ever in Stratford for the festival.
Was it intimidating being on stage with him? Both of you sound like you're relatively, you know, green on stage, and you're with a veteran.
Let me tell you what happened on the first day. We come to the table and we're, you know, introducing ourselves. Roy comes in late. Like, it's not like he's late, but he was the last person to arrive at the table. And we're introducing himself. He says, you know, my name is Aaron. It's really sort of my first role, whatever. I say, my name's Tommy. Yeah, sort of my first role. I graduated. Yay. Roy comes in and sits down. The first thing he says is, I don't want to intimidate anybody.
I don't know anything, okay? I've been doing this a long time.
I've been doing this for quite a while.
So, in other words,
I've been with Stratford for quite a while. I've done a few TV shows, but I was an extra.
Yeah, I was an extra. I'm on IMDb, but
they're all extra roles. I had no lines.
He's quite the character. He's a very good guy.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And then basically I go on IMDb. Smart decision. And then I look it up, and I wish I didn't, because you didn't. If you're green and you're like, you know what, let me see somebody who's around my level and say, okay, let me try and get there. When you want to climb a mountain, you don't look at the peak. You look at the next step. I was looking at the peak when I shouldn't even have even – I didn't even have my boots on. Like, it was – So, yeah, Roy is pretty much, he's where you want to get to if you want to become a successful actor, you know? If you want to become a superstar actor, go to Hollywood, you know, but if you want to be an actor who loves the craft and does what he does for the love of it, and I'm not saying actors in Hollywood don't, but, you know, like, there are those people that don't care about the spotlight of, you know, the world. If you want to become an actor, you do theater. If you want to really work on your craft, theater is the best way to do it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Best foundation for a lot of actors. Mm-hmm. And one more shout out to Lost, the cast of Lost, and the director, Jude. They're also touring as well.
Yep.
Check them out as well on African Theater Ensemble's website.
Yeah, it looks like you can win a free show.
Yes, you can.
So
yeah, check out africantheater.org.
And for your school, we don't do private performances. I'm just saying, we're not going to come to your house and perform for like
kitchen.
Two people. I'm just saying.
Maybe if they're serving steak and eggs.
Yeah, if you're serving steak and eggs and a couple of things that I can get only from Nigeria, then by all means, call us over. But apart from that, do it for your school or your community center. That'd be great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we just have about 5 minutes left. So if they go to see the meeting, do you strongly recommend that they do that research before? Because you mentioned before it's helpful.
It would help
to understand some of the references in the play.
You know, I think yes, it would help to know. But part of the reason I wouldn't like. It wouldn't be my first suggestion would be that sometimes it's good to come into a situation and not have an opinion about what you're about to see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's good to come in there and be like, you know what? I'm open-minded. I know the names of the main cast. Don't know Rashad, but I know the name of the main cast. And, you know, let me just see what their ideals are. And then at least it gives you that idea of, okay, so these guys had things to say about each other and, you know, their ideas and their ideals. So mm-hmm. at least now when you, if it's the case that you do the research after, the understanding that you get is a bit more profound, I think, you know, instead of having the opinion going in before and be like, oh, so that's what he meant when he said that. Mm-hmm. You always want to have, like, to come into, that's why I love theater. You can go into it with an open mind. Even if you don't understand what's going on beforehand, you can at least go and do the research after so that you can understand it afterwards. Mm-hmm. There's no time limit, mm-hmm. you know?
For sure.
Yeah. Awesome. So maybe remind listeners when they could come see the play specifically in Hard House.
Hard House.
February
26th.
8 p.m. You can get here for 7 p.m. because it's going to be packed, so you might as well find a seat.
I'm just saying 7 because, you know.
That's our closing night, so I mean, if you that'll be the grand finale.
Afterwards, that would be great.
So, and yeah, free admission, donations greatly appreciated, accepted.
Not if you to will. My bank account, but, you know, to my bar tab.
So,
yeah.
It'll be a great show. I want to say thank you for having us, guys.
Really, thank you guys for having us.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for coming through. And I mean, it's. I'm really looking forward to coming and to bring my daughter to the Hard House performance. I think about these two often, and. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested in seeing this interpretation of what this meeting would look like, because they are both so important, you know, in terms of their contributions to not only, you know, the civil rights movement, but the dialogue that mm-hmm. continues to this day. And unfortunately, as we were talking about before, you know, it's always polarized. It's like you're either with Malcolm or yeah. you're MLK.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it necessarily should be that way, or, you know, mm-hmm. we need to look at you know, how we can sort of incorporate, I think, both ideologies.
Unity.
How old is your daughter, if you don't mind me asking?
She's 15.
15.
I was going to ask that question too.
That's a good age to you know, because the generation now, I mean, this happened almost 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the generation now has no idea.
Exactly.
And so, you know, it's important.
Sorry, I was doing the math in my head.
It's important that we really let them know about these people.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
It's just, I think it's the most important thing is that, not even that you do anything about it or you try and spread the word, but just that you know. A lot of stories that you hear people talk about in their family, it was passed down by word of mouth. That's the best way to communicate, not, you know. I mean, Wikipedia is great, but it's also good to have a face-to-face storytelling kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. That's what we do every week.
Awesome.
We're all about oral tradition. So
you already know. So
yeah, definitely. Definitely. You're singing to the choir. Okay, well, I want to thank you both.
Too.
I can't sing.
Okay, that's a story for the next time you guys come.
Why'd you start this, man? Why'd you do this? Now they all owe me steak and eggs. What's going on?
I want to thank you both for coming through. It sounds like a really interesting play. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Last plugs for yourselves. I know, Aaron, you're on Twitter.
Yep.
We tweeted both you and African Theater.
Yep. Tommy?
Oh, okay. So follow me on Twitter at, you see, my English name is Dominic, so that's what I use. Dominic DTMT. Don't ask what that means. At Dominic DTMT on Twitter.
Is that Dominic with a C or CK?
With a C.
Okay.
All right. And on Instagram, if you want, it's just a bunch of pictures of snow. My full name, TOMISIND on Instagram. You know, say hi. You know, it's cool. It's cool. Yeah. Just let me know.
And Aaron,
we could go get some steak and eggs.
You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. AJM3000. And my Facebook fan page is AJ Fan Access Page. That's mainly where I put all my updates and stuff that I'm working on.
Excellent. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I will have a fan page soon.
It was our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you both for coming through.
It was no problem at all.
Break a leg, both of you.
Thank you.
Don't break femurs.
Okay, you're listening to The Vibe Collective. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, DJ Badnan, who is not here in person, is here in spirit. He's going to move you with some music, and then I will do the same. I've got a little Marley Dilla Donald Byrd tribute lined up. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to The Vibe Collective on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Always wanted to know what our most politically powerful women really think? Listen in to Three Women, the show that features women like Kathleen Wynne, Peggy Dash, Kristen Wong Tam, Christine Elliott, and your host, Sherry DeNovo.
Every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. on CIUT 89.5 FM.